And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 21st of August, 2025. You're very welcome along to today's 9 to noon show here in Highland Radio. And it's another goodie for you. Hopefully, you'll enjoy it over the next 3 hours. You'll stick with us. And of course, throughout the day here on your number one local radio station, Highland Ready. We've got loads lined up for you. We're going to have all the latest, stories behind the headlines, your comments as they come in, and of course, speaking to some very interesting people across the Northwest. Get involved in the conversation. This is quite literally your show. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000. New people texting that number every day, and we welcome you into the fold of our texters. You can give us a call as well. 074 91 25,000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. Just to remind you, of course, as I do every morning, you can watch the program as well if you're at home or have access to a smart TV or a Fire Stick. We are available on YouTube. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland. You'll see we're live. Like and subscribe if you can. It's useful to us. We're across the Facebook pages as well. Highland Radio News, Sport, and Obituary Notices, which is a great Facebook page for you as well, by the way, if you want to stay up to date with what's happening in relation to the very latest news. And you can link through to the full stories on our website, Oisin Kelly and the team with the very latest sport. And of course, something we provided, I think from sometime this year, the very latest obituary notices. So as soon as we post the latest obituary notices, they go straight to that Facebook page and you can click through again there as well. So don't forget to give that page a like as well and a follow. And we're also on the X platform as well. Lots of papers out because it is a Thursday. And 30 years ago, the Tyrconnell Tribune claimed that Rimalton is the town the council forgot. That is no longer quite true as Johnny Patterson reels off the hassle he's had to face from sources since he opened his ranch in 2018. It is a shock to the system, but due to his work ethic, he's determined to continue because he does not believe he's breaking any laws, Mr. Patterson said. The closure order is scheduled for enforcement by September 12th. I've no idea what the future holds in store, not only for myself, but also for the customers who've chosen the ranch on a frequent basis. Local councillor Port McGarvey says the regulations being pursued by the council are long out of date and are heavy-handed. The county is dotted with food trucks similar to Johnny's ranch, and I'd like to hear why the ranch has been singled out for closure in this manner. And there is a petition that's online at the moment to save Johnny's ranch, and it's proven really quite popular. And Johnny and the crew there too getting a lot of support from local elected representatives who you would imagine would have the power to get answers to the questions that Councillor McGarvey there is posing. The Derry News Donegal People, a leaflet drop organised by the Students' Union at Atlantic Technological University Donegal, has led to a surge in offers of spare rooms from local homeowners, with close to 200 applicants received ahead of the new academic year. The appeal by the university urged homeowners across the county to register their spare rooms under the National Rent a Room Scheme. It's an initiative which aims to relieve pressure on student accommodation, which also gives hosts the opportunity to earn up to €14,000 per year tax-free. And that also, if you're in receipt of any payments as well, it doesn't interfere with them, which is quite interesting. I think that's a really good thing for local residents, and I hope we played our part in carrying this annually as well, in that, you know, there are people that have a spare room and can avail of, you know, up to €14,000 of extra income per year tax-free. You know, if you're in the highest tax bracket, you'd have to earn 27 to take that home, which is, you know, a decent wage, or, you know, close to 23, 24 if you're on a lower tax bracket. So it's not an insignificant amount of money, and I'm not surprised as many as have availed of it, because you can set the rules. You can set the rules of your house effectively in advance. You know, I don't want people over, I don't want music late at night, and so on and so forth. But also too, there are people living alone that feel happier with someone in the property with them, and they get to meet them in advance, I believe, and also, as I say, take that money in. So there's lots of benefits. It's a good scheme, I think. The Derry News this morning reports that an 81-year-old man who sexually abused his daughter over a two-year period starting in April 1978, when she was just eight, has been jailed at Derry Crown Court. His daughter, who was in court for the sentencing hearing, supported by several members of her family, said she wanted her abusive father to be named. He is John James Callaghan from Bridge Street in Derry City Centre. On to the Irish Times now, and it's welcome to see the defective concrete block scheme getting any national coverage. It's on the front page. It's referred to the mica block scheme. We know it's not that any longer, but you know what? If it's on the front pages and people are reading about it, so be it. But just 7% of applicants to the defective concrete block scheme have had their homes remediated in the 5 years since the scheme opened, new records show. Some 220 homeowners have had their remediation works completed under the scheme out of a total of 2,870 applicants since it opened in June 2020, according to figures released by the Department of Housing up to the end of July 2025. What's interesting here for me, 2,870, what are people waiting for? Are they not there yet ready to formally apply? Are they holding out? Maybe you're one of those with defective concrete blocks. We know the number is way, way, way higher than 2,870. I just want to say, and I don't want to be negative, of those 220 that have had their remedial works carried out, how many of those are out to leaf, you know, and how many of those are complete rebuilds? And of those complete rebuilds, how many are on, you know, bases that effectively could potentially, and we hope it doesn't, deteriorate into the future? But in terms of sort of outer leaf remediation, how many of that 220 might end up having to try and get back into this scheme because we know the blocks continue to fail, both inside and out? A further 977 applicants have issued notices to commence work. So 997 plus 220, you're heading up towards half of those who've made applications to the scheme. The defective concrete block grant scheme helps homeowners to repair or rebuild their homes where significant damage has been caused by the presence of pyrite or mica in the blocks used to build it. Well, it's not mica, so I'm going to scribble that out. These minerals found in blocks linked to certain quarries cause cracks and other defects to appear in structures. The scheme was originally opened in June 2020 and covered counties Mayo and Donegal, with owners able to claim 90% of a maximum rebuild cost of £247,500. Wow, that was a low cap at that time. It was extended, of course, thanks to campaigners arguing that this left a huge gap in funding the actual cost of rebuilding their homes. A gap still remains for many out there. But there is obviously significant building happening. You see these houses being rebuilt. But I just wonder if the 220, how many were outer leaf only and how many of those will have to go back into the scheme. And I'll also be very interested to see if there's a surge in applicants if the science shows what everyone expects to be it to show. That the houses will have to be completely knocked down and may in fact need foundations replaced. We shall watch on. That will be very interesting, but we're going to have to wait, I would say, deep into next year. I know there's a mixed bag out there in terms of your interest or disinterest in the presidential race, but look, a lot of people are interested in this. Many of you will go out and vote, and this is in the Irish Independent, because Fianna Fáil is expected now to enter the presidential race and select a candidate within 10 days. Taoiseach Micheál Martin is expected to have a Fianna Fáil presidential candidate on the pitch in the next 10 days as pressure builds within his party to outline his plans. Private conversations have been taking place among party representatives over the past 24 hours to try to force a meeting so the party can discuss its strategy. A gathering of the parliamentary parties now likely in the first days of next month before the scheduled pre-Dáil thinking takes place in Cork on September 15th. The Dáil will not be back until deep into September. After months of equivocation, which means really no decision, Fianna Fáil is now almost certain to field a candidate. Developments in Fine Gael in recent days have strengthened the view building throughout the summer among its ranks that the party should enter the race. I think part of this is that there's a real issue with Simon Harris and his public perception at the moment. A lot of people are down on him. And I suspect that Fianna Fáil are looking at that and saying, right, this is not going to help their candidate. There's an opportunity for us here because Sinn Féin have yet to sort of throw their weight or their hat into the ring. But again, who is Fianna Fáil's candidate? Who is it? I know there's a lot of local support for Pat the Cope Gallagher. This is a national, now he's very well known, don't get me wrong. This is a national vote. Okay, so they're going to say, right, would the likes of a Pat the Cope draw votes from all over the place? Do they look outside the party? Someone maybe who supports Fianna Fáil but isn't necessarily a part of the party. For me, that would almost be an admittance of a failure of sorts that over the last 20, 30 years, you haven't been able to sort of develop a candidate from within the party that you think could win the election. So it's very, very interesting. I don't know if you have any views on who you would like to see Fianna Fáil. There's a lot of Fianna Fáil support in this county, 20-odd percent voted the last time. So who would you like to see Fianna Fáil put? And if it's Bertie Hearn, say Bertie Hearn. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes people, I think, might not comment because they think, you know, people will be very critical of it. It's your view. Stand by your view. Send it in. We respect all views here on the 9 till noon show. But whomever it might be, maybe it is Pat the Cope Gallagher. Maybe it was Paddy Bonner's name mentioned at one point. There's someone with, you know, a national profile and is quite stoic. Is that the right word? Quite stately when he wants to be. In other words, what I mean when I see him. So I don't know. Who do you think? 08660 25,000. The Irish Daily Mail this morning. This is something I think we as parents and guardians really need to be very cautious of, because I kind of feel, whether I'm right or wrong, that I'm kind of across trends. But this laughing gas problem is one that I don't know an awful lot about. And I'll read the story in a moment. But it's Galaxy Gas is how they're being marketed to our young people. And they look attractive, if you know what I mean. They're a nice colour. The box looks like a toy, effectively. They're 100 packs and they're flavoured. And they look fine because it's not like you're getting a bit of cocaine in a baggie and it all feels very, you know, these look like it's legit. So I do wonder, do you ever see these canisters about, by the way? How would you describe them? What do they look like? They're about 2 inches long and they're cylindrical and taper towards the end. And for those of who are watching, I'm going to hold a picture up here, but I know the majority of you aren't. But I just wonder, have you seen these empty canisters lying around any parks around our region? I don't really know what... They're like tiny, tiny little gas bottles, I suppose, and that's what they are. But anyway, I'll read on because they're no joke. Parents have been warned that potentially fatal nitrous oxide is being marketed with vape-style fruit flavours to entice children. Nitrous oxide, known as laughing gas or hippie crack, is now being sold in sweet flavours by drug dealers to children as young as 12, a TD has cautioned. The canisters are also easily available on official websites which advertise the product for use in making cocktail flavours, including mango, strawberry, grape and bubble gum. So, as I say, I'm just curious, apparently a lot of the time when young people, or maybe not so young people, take this gas, and I honestly, and I'm pleased to say, I don't necessarily know how they might do that. I presume it's inhaling it. The canisters are disposed of. So if you've seen any sort of small, you know, maybe coloured little canisters around the place, let us know. I'd love to get a sense of what's going up here in relation to that. 086 60 25,000. And hey, if you have any pictures, send them through to us as well. The Irish Farmers Journal: record beef prices and tight cattle supplies across Europe are fueling a red-hot start to autumn weaning sales. The top third of weanling bulls, weighing over 350 kilograms, are up almost 900 euro ahead on the last year, with sale prices averaging 2,212 ahead. And there's a bit of a rush too on lamb prices as well. Fat lamb's doing quite well at the moment, I understand. Were you the victim of a scam by a so-called influencer? Let's have a look at this story in the Irish Daily Mirror. An influencer, in inverted commas, is under a Garda investigation for allegedly scamming dozens of people into purchasing fake electric picnic tickets. The young woman is alleged to have coerced potentially hundreds of people to hand over money in a sophisticated social media scam. Victims first came forward online to claim they had been scammed by the woman who had used her own platform to claim she was selling two tickets to the sold-out festival. Caroline, is this the same story that we were talking of? So this is a real person who you would know. They have been in the spotlight in the past, outside of sort of the social media gaze. They were involved in a competition, let me put it like that. This story broke as we were sort of digging into it a little bit because it was a named individual and we were contacted or had contact with another individual. And because it's a named individual, you have to tread a little bit carefully to make sure you get everything right. But anyway, it's hit the papers before we were able to establish all of that. Now, several of these victims have gone to the Gardaí and made formal statements. The Garda Fraud Squad, who have formally opened an investigation into the claims, have spoken to the woman at the centre of the alleged scam, but she has not been arrested. Sources said she'd been fully cooperative with detectives. Very keen to find out if any of you out there, she was involved in a national competition. She's not from around here. So maybe that's enough information, as much as I can give at this time. Were you the victim of an electric picnic scam? Let me know. And last but certainly not least, and I hold it to last because of its importance, Israel has approved controversial plans for a settlement project that would effectively cut off the occupied West Bank from East Jerusalem. This is against international law, quite clearly. That's not anti anything. What they're doing in this settlement project is against international law. This at the same time that Israel, whilst there is a peace plan on the table, they have started to bomb the living daylights out of Gaza City, the last real urban area that's left in Palestine. They are bombing it. They've called up 60,000 reserves. Quite a lot of reserves are refusing to go back into Gaza, but that's not going to stop them. They've called up 60,000 new reservists to effectively take over Gaza City. And once that is destroyed, what's left? And also, too, the problem with what they're doing in the West Bank as well really effectively puts a severe blocker on the possibility of a two-state solution. And I think they know fine well what they're doing. They're trying to do as much as they can now and hope history forgets and achieve what they've probably always set out to achieve, and that is the elimination of that enclave. Well, the controversial plans by Israel PM Benjamin Netanyahu are in violation, as I mentioned, of the international law and would be a major blow to any hope for a two-state solution to the conflict with the people of Palestine. The E1 project would bisect the occupied West Bank and cut it off from East Jerusalem. Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich is an ultra-nationalist on the ruling right-wing coalition and declared yesterday, with E1, we are delivering finally on what has been promised for years. So they are now quite literally a law unto themselves. And, you know, people can laud Trump for what he's doing. I know it seems since that attempted assassination that he seems more in touch with his mortality. Or at least that's the impression you might get with him trying to get the Nobel Peace Prize. Maybe that's a way of him trying to get into heaven. I don't know. And trying to settle conflicts. But he won't touch Gaza. He won't touch Israel for some reason. And that is what he'll be remembered for, I'd imagine. You know, we can't choose what people remember us for. And there's many, many others with blood on their hands as well who were complicit in this. And history won't forget that either. All right, we'll be back with more after the break. We're joined on the programme now by Rebecca McDade, who's chair of AINTHU in Donegal. But this isn't an AINTHU issue as such, Rebecca, is it? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, okay. So you are issuing a warning to people travelling to our cities, really, isn't it? For any breaks, be it a holiday, I suppose, or work-related. What is this off the back of?
Well, myself and the children went to Dublin. We had a hospital appointment, actually, in Crumlin. And when we came out of the hospital, we went to get a bite to eat. And then we went to Tato Park. We had to change tickets for the following day. But when we got back to the hotel, we realised that someone had tried to break into the Jeep, not doing any damage, but the bonnet was lifted on one side. So that's when we realised somebody was tampering with the vehicle.
Mm.
But we carried on. I went to a garage and they were able to fix the bonnet for me and got it back down again. But they told me that there's a certain way now that they're able to get into vehicles and they're using like a tablet as a technology device. And if they had been able to achieve it, she would have been on a ship and she would have been gone out of here. So we could have been walking home or on the bus.
Where did that happen? Sorry, the damage to the navy blue Jeep or the black Jeep, the dark blue Jeep. Where did that happen?
So it was in Dublin, and it wasn't far from Crumlin Hospital.
Right. Okay. And then what happened?
Well, we came home then, so we're thinking, well, you know, you can say, well, lesson learned. You know, maybe take yourself a wee bit more out of the city, away from the area, and eat somewhere else. Because that was our priority, was just getting something to eat. It was after 6 o'clock in the evening. And then my husband had to travel for work, and he left on Monday night. And he has a van, a work van. It's only a few weeks old.
Hi, Rebecca, are you there? No, I'll reconnect with Rebecca. The line has dropped out there. Right, we are watching the damage that's been caused. There was a second incident as well, really, which is quite bizarre. Very unlucky, in fact. If this has happened to you, and I just wonder maybe if it did happen to people, they might not necessarily know what was happening. So let us know, 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000. I'm going to try and rejoin Rebecca in a moment, because as I say, this is oops, my word, I've pulled back the curtain. You can see what I'm doing, that I'm actually ringing. Rebecca, are you back with me? Hello, Rebecca. Okay, good stuff. Yeah, so then your husband's heading off in the van.
Yeah, my husband had to go to work, and he went off on Monday night. And when I got up on Tuesday morning, there was a great big hole in the side door of his van. So we have been, like, he has been told that what's happening is that their vans are being broken into, thinking that there may be tools and things that's obviously worth money in them. There's nothing in his van, so there's no tools in it. He doesn't carry any tools, so it was only his work boots, that's all, and a coat.
But it seems I've never seen a break-in like this, they seem to be exposing part of the internal structures that allows them to unlock the van. Is that what's happening there? Because this is something I've not seen before.
I never seen it before either, Greg, but I couldn't believe it when I saw the photographs. And it was just ironic at the fact that you could say, for me, you know, where you parked, well, maybe you shouldn't have bothered parking there and you could have went somewhere else. But I mean, he was parked outside the front door of a hotel and it still happened. So it's just more about being aware of maybe your surroundings, the things that you have in your car, that maybe it might not necessarily be even the items you have in your car. They're looking for your car and they're looking to get away with the actual item itself, with the vehicle itself. So it's about being more aware and maybe parking in areas where, you know, just think twice about where you're parking. Make sure there might be CCTV footage around you, you know, that might be able to back you up.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because they seem to be particularly safe. For instance, if we were looking at the Jeep, they seem to be able to get in there very, very quickly, in and out. I would say their faces aren't showing. They've got it down to a T. And then in relation to the van there, I mean, they hunker down to the side of that van. They know exactly where to try and pop it open. You know, it'd make you worry about even parking in a well-lit space with CCTV. They seem so proficient in what they're doing. Might you be protected? And the problem with the van, you know, Rebecca, you'll hear, and you'll be well aware, of course, Gardaí say, you know, don't leave valuables on show, because, you know, people might break your windows and steal them. The problem with vans is I think there's almost a presumption that there's going to be something good in the van. So parking it anywhere in this day and age almost feels like a risk.
Yeah. And that, I suppose, that's really the warning. That's just, you know, whether you have anything in your vehicle or not, like, as he, you know, he didn't have anything in his, and she's only a few weeks old. And it's not his own van, luckily enough for us, it's not his own van, it is a work van. But, I mean, the company still has to change the door and put on a brand new door there. So it's an unnecessary cost for them.
For sure. And for myself, in relation to the lucky. Jeep, is that bonnet, I don't know if it's the design of the bonnet or if they've kinked the front of the bonnet. Does that bonnet have to be replaced now, or was it able to be repaired where you wouldn't notice the damage?
Well, believe it or not, Greg, there was three big dents on the left-hand side of the bonnet where they actually, or the right-hand side as you're looking at it, from outside, where they were trying to get at the bonnet, but it wasn't working. They only could get one side lifted and not the other side. So it must have been locked in some way. And that's over the area where you have the wee lever that opens the bonnet.
Yeah.
So that side wouldn't open for them.
So clearly they're looking to get at the electronics so that they can just take it away and, you know.
Possibly, yes. Yeah. That's possibly what it was. And when I went to the garage the following morning, because I asked the people in the hotel, could they help me with the garage in the morning to get someone to help me to put it back down again before I would drive down the road. Mm. Well, my worry was that maybe you could go over a bump or whatever, and the next thing then the bonnet will flip up on you when you're travelling from Dublin to home.
100%.
So I thought, I need to get this bonnet back into place again, and fair play to them, they were able to do it, no bother, but... Well, it wasn't no bother now, but they were able to do it for me.
And there's two things going on here. Is this just, and I don't mean it badly, but this might be better, just bad luck on behalf of you and your other half? Or is this kind of what can happen now, you know, is even possible or likely to happen if you take your vehicles down to the likes of Galway and Dublin? Do you get where I'm coming from? I mean, because it's two events for you guys on two different vehicles so close together in two different cities. It's, you would hope that that's just your bad luck on this occasion, because as I say, you'd be afraid to park anywhere.
Well, that's my concern. Like, I suppose it's ironic the fact that it's the two of us out of the one house within the space of a week, because it was literally only last Wednesday and then this happened on Monday night. So only in the space of a couple of days. But, you know, the joke was, well, maybe next time don't be parking there and go somewhere else, you know, and get yourself out of the city and don't leave yourself so exposed. But, like, you know, for my husband to be travelling to his work and staying in a hotel, you know, to have his van broke, you know, destroyed, actually, the door is destroyed, so the door itself has to be
finished.
Replaced.
Okay.
That's done.
You couldn't patch that.
No, but it's the fact that, I suppose it's the fact that it's two different ways of them working. Mm. That's been a big eye-opener for me.
Yeah, non-traditional.
His van.
Yeah, because you'd expect maybe a crowbar in the door handle, a smashed window, put the hand in. You know, this is, it's low-noise stuff. They know where to peel back the outer skin of the van to potentially access, you know, whatever they need to access to open the door. And it's quite interesting. The last place I would have thought you go to try and steal something from a vehicle or to take the vehicle would be to try and lever the bonnet. But there's obviously something of value in there. We know, you know, catalytic converters are often stolen in the cities as well, but that's not up front. Like, I don't believe it is anyway. Okay, listen, Rebecca, it's very interesting. I mean, obviously, let's not be scared. Let's be cautious. But you've had a couple of instances of very bad luck, and we hope it's just not something.
And I'm lucky, Greg, that there's no damage done to mine. A few scratches on the bonnet and around the chrome part, you know. But in fairness, they actually didn't damage her.
Which
again was so surprising when I found it, because I thought, oh, how did they manage to do that? Mm. So it was a surprise.
Well, if they're looking to sell it on, if they're looking to sell it on, let's say that was the motivation. I suppose the less damage they do, the more value the product. Okay, Rebecca, listen, thanks very much for helping us get that warning out. That is Rebecca McDade there. Have you experienced anything similar? Let me know. 086 60 25,000. A caller says, I moved to Dublin to work in construction. Almost every night for a month, my van was broken into, regardless of where I tried to park it. I ended up having to return to Donegal. That doesn't surprise me. How could you put up with that all the time? Now, you would know, we, as many others have been covering the, it was controversial amongst the public, 17 houses at the Lochfern Heights in Milford. Well, it's reported today in the Tyrconnell Tribune that Donegal County Council has agreed to purchase these houses after a new stream of negotiations led to agreement between both parties, the council and PJD Construction. The paper understands from their sources that it is intended to have the project let out for social housing in the Milford electoral area as soon as is possible. Now, these houses were originally constructed by PJD Construction at the height of the COVID pandemic as material costs went through the roof. The project was a turnkey development and the first of its kind in the Milford electoral area since 2010. And a year ago, the council issued a statement to rescind its decision to purchase the houses due to a disagreement over costs. The development, the developer had sought an increased price, an uplift, some might call it, following delays related to COVID-19 and rising inflation. And we heard from, not necessarily in relation to this development, but we heard from the CEO, John McLaughlin, in the past saying, look, at the end of the day, the council has to ensure that it is spending public money responsible in these cases, and they offer what... there is a deal done, and if the price goes up, they have to factor in an awful lot of stuff, as I say, to make sure the public get a good value for their money. Councillor Liam Blaney of Fianna Fáil, a councillor local to that area. Good morning, Liam. Thanks for your time. Oh, sorry, Liam, off the wrong fader up. Sorry, there you go. Good morning to you. Right, so would you welcome these reports? I presume they're true. John McAteer wouldn't publish them otherwise, that these houses now are being acquired by the council.
Look, it's very welcome to hear that there's movement as far as the houses is concerned. Now, as far as I'm aware, it's a housing body that is buying, purchasing the houses. And the housing body then takes the applicants off the Donegal County Council social housing list, and that's the way that the houses is allocated.
So you're saying it's not
through the housing body, not through Donegal County Council.
Okay, so it's a housing body that's purchased them now, and they make them available to the council. So who funds that? Pardon my
ignorance. I'm not saying they're purchased, Greg. There's negotiations ongoing, and okay. Hopefully it will lead to a successful conclusion.
And where do housing agencies get the funds to purchase these properties? Is it through the council or is it central government funding? Or
They are funded through the department, but they've put up, I think it's 30% of the funding themselves, and I think it's 70% comes through the department, and they have to pay that money back through time. And look, personally, I'd rather see the council owning the houses, self-builds, and if we own the houses and we get the rent from them. Mm. When they go to the housing bodies, the council doesn't get any rent from them. And but with the situation we're in with the housing at present, and we have been in this last number of years, that we're open to getting houses from anywhere, anyway, whether it's through housing bodies or whether it's through any other system, we're open to get as many houses as we can to try and help to resolve the massive housing prices we have in this county.
But in this situation, obviously 17 houses become available, but these are not assets of the councils then. And also, that means that they will always remain assets unless they're offloaded of the housing agency, which means, as I say, unless something changes into the future, they won't ever necessarily be available for purchase by the tenants unless that agency themselves decide that's the route they wish to go down.
Well, as far as I know, that the housing agencies cannot sell the houses within 30 years.
Wow, okay.
I think they have up to 30 years to pay back the funding first, and they can't sell them houses. What to do with them houses after that is up to themselves. But look, that aside, I think it's very good news that there is negotiations taking place as far as I'm concerned. I have been talking to the developer, and he's fairly positive about it as well. And it's not just this site and the county. There have been a number of other sites in the county as well, and hopefully there's movement taking place in them as well, and that we will be successful and getting them available to the applicants in the council social housing list as well.
Yeah, it's great news.
If we can get these houses, if the Association of Housing Body can purchase these houses, that's going to be good news for the people of Milford. I know we were here 3 years ago when we thought that the deal was going to be done with the council and the developer. And we were looking at that time, hopefully that's coming up to near Christmas 3 years ago that they would be let out. But unfortunately, 3 years later, we're in the situation where we are today. But, you know, we thought at that time, we're thinking this time maybe, hopefully, that they may be available to tenants before Christmas this year. But, look, we can't guarantee nothing until the deal is struck and everything is agreed on. We just can't say that. But I think everything is moving in the right direction. Hopefully keep moving in that direction and that these houses will become available sooner rather than later.
We do need developers. We need developers developing property. Now, obviously, we were in a particular time whereby, you know, deals were done and then costs went through the roof and developers, and I'm speaking generally, you know, felt that they weren't able to absorb those costs. But we need the council working with developers, and we need developers active in this county as part of the solution to the housing crisis, because they do have money and they will spend it elsewhere, whereby the pathway to profits is easier.
Yeah, we do need the developers. We do need the houses. And look, I'm aware of three developers looking to develop houses in Milford. Mm. Extra house in Milford, plus the council is going to provide 12 of themselves, hopefully before the end of next year as well. So look, as far as the developers providing are going to provide the houses, it's looking positive. But I have to say, my fear is that they might not get built in the houses, and if they do get built in the houses, they may not have the supplies necessary to put people into the houses, and what I mean there is the water supply in the Milford area.
What does that mean, Liam? Because there's a hose pipe ban ongoing now, and if you sort of read what Ishka Aaron is saying about it, there doesn't seem to be any hope in sight. They keep extending it. I think it's into September now, but we've had very, very little rainfall, and that supply is running low. And I don't think even if it rained 40 days and 40 nights, it would replenish it to the place that it needs to be. So what does that mean? Say an application goes in Milford that would need to be connected to that water supply for 25 houses, for an example. Could that still go ahead, or would the planners look at the situation with water and say, well, there's not enough water at the moment for what's there? How does that infrastructure in real terms potentially affect development in the years ahead?
There's a massive impact on the development. You take, before AIDS water took over, you applied on the Galway County Council for plan motion for your houses. If you have a plan motion for your houses, you've got permission as well to connect to the main sewer and to the public water supply. Now, if you're looking at building houses in Milford, you have to, you've been in discussions with the staff of the Galway County Council. One of the things we'll ask you to do is to go and get the go-ahead from Irish Water. And that can take 3 to 4 months to get a reply back from them. And with the situation with the water at present in Milford, it's very unlikely that new developers will get the permission to go ahead.
Yeah. Because Irish Water are in the business of providing water, not housing. So they have to look at it in those raw terms.
They have to look at it, and they have to look to see what supply is and what's available. And unfortunately, the way things is demand, as you say, the hose pipe ban has been on this last 4 months. How much longer after September it will be on, I don't know. But I'm sure it'll go on longer, because they have reduced where they're supplying water to out of the reservoir in Milford, but the reservoir is still reducing and size. The supply is reducing all the time, whether it is through the cracks that's appeared with the dry weather and with the reservoir going down and extra water is escaping, or what it is, I do not know, but the reservoir is still going down as far as I'm concerned, or as far as I'm aware of. And that's a very, very serious situation up there. And they have to spend large amount of money on a new treatment plant up there, and you know, the way it's going at the minute, they might, in my own opinion, I think through time we could see maybe that reservoir not being viable, or not being enough of supply to supply, and maybe closing down. I don't know. I think something seriously has to be done with it. And
is there any?
I know they are upgrading the plant in Cranford to try and pump up extra water up into the Milford area. But I think it could be the end of this year before that's finished.
Yeah, and then, that obviously, you know, there's only so much water can go around. There's only so much water can be pumped from one area to the next. It's kind of, you know, medium to long term solutions we need here, because the demand is there. The population is growing, you know, especially if the will is there to build houses. It's crazy if the blocks are being put on it, because Irish Water would have to say, I suppose, we don't have the water for either a single house, let alone a development of 30, or a new hotel, or whatever it might be.
Unfortunately, it could hold back this whole area. And I say this whole area, I mean the Milford and Letterkenny, municipal district area. It could hold it all back from development for a number of years. And if you look, and you're fully aware of the situation in Downing, I'm quite sure, where there's a restriction on at night time. We have Kerrygaard, Glen, the same. Melton, as the supply going from Melton coming from Letterkenny, is very, very poor a lot of the time. We have the restrictions on the hosepipe bans on Milford, and like the whole area has just been has been hampered.
And Irish Water say Letterkenny, Buncrana, Ardraa are on the, not Ardraa, I don't want to, but certainly Letterkenny, Buncrana are on the brink as well in terms of you know, water supply.
Definitely, and it has been on the brink for quite a while. But you know, to get answers from SGEARN or Irish Water, it's very hard to get anything concrete or up to date of what's going on. And I'll give you an example. They meet us once a year now as councillors. We met them last September. We got the reply to our questions in the end of June. And the reason we got a reply, in my opinion, is because we're meeting them again in September. And the reply we got was six replies to questions that had been asked, but the questions had been all bundled into some and similar questions from different councillors.
Yeah.
And nothing direct.
No specifics.
Generic than anything else. But they said that they thought the answers were sent out in November to us, but they only realised in June that they hadn't been sent out to us. But look, that's just, and that's the way they treat people, no matter who you are. Anybody that is in contact with them, even when their office or their call centre in Cork, then you never get what you say, I suppose, a reply that you'll be happy with, that you'll be confident in what you've been told.
But even too, though, when an outage is reported, you know, more details to follow. Invariably, there's never any more details. That's it. It's noted that the issue is there. All right, Liam, listen, thank you very much for that and a bit of clarity too. I do appreciate it. Councillor Liam Blaney there. And I put this question to Simon Harris, of all people, and others as well, when they were up talking about housing and the housing issue in Donegal, and I've been banging on for as long, and it's not that I have any great insight, others are the same. It's not about, you know, necessarily planning permission on this road or, you know, investment or money available. It is our infrastructure. Our infrastructure up here, particularly in terms of water and sewerage, is very, very poor. Water is a problem. How could Irish Water provide permission for any property in Milford when there's a hosepipe ban? And there are other areas, as I say, that are on the brink. I know Liam mentioned there Downing's Carrigart. They have had their, certainly Downing's, they've had their water restricted. But there's no rain forecast for the next week. And, you know, we could have a drier winter. What happens then? And what are the plans to address these issues? A real issue when it comes to water supply. And from that, housing development, business development, hotel development, whatever it might be. Thank you so much for those of you calling in with your comments. And by the way, we tend now, it seems to have become a regular thing where we play requests and dedications just after 10. So if there's anyone special in your life celebrating a special birthday or anniversary, or you want us to say hello, get them into us now and we can include them in that we wrap up we do after 10. Good morning, Greg. Why are there so many car washes still allowed to operate when the hosepipe ban is on? It's ridiculous. You can get your car washed and not be allowed to use a hose pipe to water your garden or flowers that help the environment. Everything's not always as it seems. Firstly, these are commercial premises and they're paying for the water where others aren't. But a lot of these businesses too have quite innovative ways to source water. So it's not always necessarily coming from the public supply. I'm not saying that's exclusively the case, but sometimes. These attempted car and van break-ins is a regular everyday around-the-clock occurrence in London, and the majority of UK cities witnessed this firsthand in London, Birmingham and Bradford. I never thought we'd see the likes of this starting to happen in cities and towns in Ireland. Every man in the building trade in the UK know what the exact kind of criminal looks like. This is a known fact across the board. All right. The courts would suggest it's not all what you're kind of probably suggesting it is, but listen, I'll take your point. Okay, we'll be back with much more after the news and obituary notices.